Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast whose predictions are about as accurate as YouGov's. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner of propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
It's our final podcast before polling day and we're going to quickly sum up the race and we're going to say what we think will happen. Then we'll be back on Saturday to tell you why we were wrong. This is just to give you an insight into how the Not Enough Champagne sausage is made in the sausage factory. We're recording this the Saturday before polling day. Look, if anything dramatic happens, we can't really factor that in. We're just going on the state of the race now. And actually, Stephen Bush on the New Statesman podcast made an interesting point that I suppose this election is essentially, how important are the fundamentals going into an election race? Because the big Tory lead in the polls in terms of voter intention, the big lead Theresa May had over Corbyn in terms of being Prime Minister, the big lead in terms of managing the economy, they were all there at the start of the campaign. They were set in stone beforehand. What we've seen over the campaign is Labour eating into that lead quite a bit. And it'll be interesting to see, is that lead going to reassert itself because of these fundamentals, the fact that actually, although the gap between May and Corbyn as Prime Minister has narrowed as to who people think will be the best Prime Minister, it's still about the same gap as it was in 2015, when that was seen as being one of the more fundamental factors in Cameron winning. So it'll be interesting to see how important election campaigns are.
Yeah, you know, there's an entire academic field of study on this as to what kind of impact campaigns actually have.
We've got 9 things we're predicting, so I think I'll go to you first, then we can alternate who's going to say them first. So, first question then, who's going to be the largest party and how big will their majority be?
So, I'm going to ignore the YouGov polling, which suggests that we're going to have a hung parliament. I can't really see that happening. I am a big believer in the fundamentals model, or the fundamentals as modelling for your predictions for these sorts of things. So, I'm going to go for the Tory majority. However, I don't think it's going to be a stonking thing. It's definitely not going to be a landslide. There's still a chance that it could be, but I just can't see how, given the campaign that they've had. So I'm going to go with a Tory majority of about 40 to 60 seats.
I think I'm taking the LJ approach. Those of you who subscribe to us and have heard Luke John Davis give his predictions will know he's been quite successful by being as pessimistic as he can. I've gone for a Tory majority between 50 and 100, but probably edging more towards 100 than 50. I think it's a replay of there's an interesting historical parallel that Jonathan Friedland mentioned, actually. And he mentioned the parallel of 1987. Where Labour was widely seen to have the best campaign, and Peter Mandelson professionalised the model. However, they still lost by a majority of 100 seats to Margaret Thatcher. Before that, in 83, Labour lost 140 seats, so you could say 8 into that majority. Although the lead in the polls has narrowed over the past 4 or 5 weeks of the election campaign, I think you'll probably see a bit of a swing back Tory in the final few days. There's going to be a lot of media blitz. Especially, as you say, the polls with YouGov, I think they overstate the propensity of young people to vote. I think they overstate the propensity of non-voters to vote. I don't think that Labour will quite see the heights it's hit in the polls.
I would agree with all of that. But I think the basic factors are going to be that I think in some areas, potentially like seats like Birmingham Selly Oak, where there is a large student population, you know, though the increased the propensity of young people to back Corbyn over Theresa May and therefore vote Labour over the Conservatives is the sort of thing which can in some seats actually make a difference. Now, when you go into the analysis on this, there's not huge numbers of seats where that young people are going to, you know, potentially overturn results as a whole, but there might be enough which enables Labour to hold on to, a reasonable number and not fall into landslide territory if young people turn out to vote. And when you look at the reported levels on a number of the polls, because it's not just YouGov who are showing high self-reported likely to vote from young people now. ICM, Ipsos Mori are all showing narrowing Conservative leads based around a similar situation. And when you look at their models, they are much more in line with previous campaigns. So we're talking with certain elections in the 1990s and the 2000s, where for whatever reason young people just happened to turn up to vote. So on those ones, it is possible. As I say, it all boils down to the propensity of those young people to actually turn out.
And Corbyn's electoral strategy has been that Labour does not necessarily need to win over Tory voters. What Labour needs to do is to more to a left-wing direction, needs to win those people who are voting Green, who needs to win those young people who don't vote, and win those people over who aren't young but don't vote and are being energised by the policies they've got in the manifesto. Now, it's been our view, and has been for the year we've been recording this podcast, that cannot win an election.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we are wrong about that, fair play to Corbyn.
Yeah, if we're wrong, we will happily admit mea culpa and be probably relatively happy about it. But the reality is that it is not a likely outcome that you will see a Labour victory out of high youth engagement and high turnout of non-voters. You might see a staving off of a complete disaster, but that's not the same thing as a victory.
No, we'll save that for the post-mortem, I think. Let's go on then. The second question is kind of related anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, will Labour match its vote share in 2015? Now, I thought previously that Labour wouldn't match its vote share, which I believe was 31.2%.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll probably match that, if not do a little bit better, partly because there's been this return to two-party politics. We haven't seen a Lib Dem surge. The Greens have been squeezed. UKIP's vote is collapsing, and it's not all breaking for the Tories, interestingly.
Mm. Yeah, I think Labour are probably just about going to hit that 31% mark. And I think a lot of it is going to be down to actually youth, as much as what we've just been talking about. In certain seats, you're going to see potentially some quite large increased turnout of young people voting. And they will vote primarily for Labour. The problem is those seats are few. Those young people are in a select few seats. So politics.co.uk did some analysis on this, which came out today, I think, which was essentially said there are something like 65 seats, which, the bulk of the young registration was happening in. And guess what? They were all the student areas, which makes complete sense. 50-odd of them were already held by Labour. All in all, it's probably not going to make a huge difference to the number of seats that are held, but it might prevent the loss of some.
I think it's a bit like the Clinton effect, isn't it, in 2016, where she got huge majorities in new places like New York, California, but then didn't do well in those Rust Belt states.
Yeah, lost Michigan.
Mm. And if Corbyn takes Ohio this time, something very strange is happening. I think that vote share, that will matter when we talk about
the future of the Labour Party and leadership.
But please, God, can we talk about that in the post-mortem? Or preferably never. We've done the big two. Poor old Lib Dems, Tim Farron.
Mm-hmm. It's not had a good campaign.
Not had a good campaign, has he? Bless him, a little pixie. How many seats, Steve, do you think the Lib Dems will get?
Essentially, I think they're going to end up with potentially around 12 to 15 seats, depending on how certain things fall. So they've got 9 currently. I think they're going to maintain Richmond. So Sarah Olney will stay there, MP. But I think there's a potential that they may lose Norman Lamb. Would be a great shame, in my opinion, but hey-ho, that's electoral politics for you.
Lamb to the slaughter, you could say.
Indeed. So that gives you back to the 8. London, the Lib Dems in certain areas are doing quite nicely. Vince Cable likely to return. Potentially Ed Davey as well. Puts you up to 10. Lose, Norman Baker's former seat, being Lib Dem candidate Kelly Marie Blundell, being running a very active campaign, and seems to be within a chance of gaining something there. So that puts us on 11. Throw in a few odds and sods around here, maybe Cambridge for Julian Huppert returning, and then the potential for one or two gains up in Scotland. I think it was Edinburgh West, which the Lib Dems won at the last Holyrood election, so there's potential there. I think that's Christine Jardine, is the Lib Dem candidate up there, could take that off of the SNP. Potential maybe for Jo Swinson to make a comeback. So that all in all, that puts you on about 14. Maybe they can get up 15 or 16, depending on how the cards fall in some other areas. We'll have to wait and see, but they should hit double figures.
This is why I like having you on the podcast, because you can do the big detail. You can speaking of the Lib Dem stuff, I've just written 5 to 15.
It's a bit of a range there.
Yeah.
Complete disaster to...
to double. Well, well-known pessimist of this parish, Luke John Davis, he thought the Lib Dems might lose seats. I think it would have to fall very, very badly.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're going to have a podcast coming up on Brexit, and we'll talk about maybe why Brexit hasn't been a big issue in this election campaign. It depends if that message does cut through in enough seats. If it doesn't, I mean, the Tories have been targeting apparently Tim Farron's seat.
Which seems a bit odd. That to me sounds like it's more of a let's try and spook the Lib Dems so that they're not spending resources elsewhere.
I suppose maybe that's hubris at the start of the campaign because, I mean, Dennis Skinner's seat in Bolsover had cabinet ministers visiting it. So I think there was this sense that they could try and go everywhere. And that was before the wheels completely came off the wagon. I think it would be a catastrophic if they lost seats. If they end up with 14-15, actually, I imagine the Dems will be fairly happy.
I think they'll say, yeah, that's a good result. It would certainly avoid any questions of Tim Farron's leadership. However, given the rhetoric that they've been engaged in about the hashtag Lib Dem fight back and potentially some very failed expectation management, they were banking on this being a realignment election, which it hasn't been.
Tune in to us to find out why, I suppose.
Yeah.
Next one then. Any shock results? Now, high-profile MPs losing their seats. I mean, potentially someone like Mary Creary in Wakefield is one of those MPs in the North who might go. I know she's not a very big name, but she did stand for the leadership 2 years ago. I think Nick Clegg, if there's any shock name, maybe Nick Clegg might be someone.
I can see why you're going for that, but at the same time, I think they couldn't get rid of Clegg when he was at his most unpopular, and they were throwing all the resources at it to the extent where they should have been throwing resources elsewhere, like at Ed Ball's constituency. I can't see it happening. Hallam voted Remain. I think if it did happen, it would be a shock.
I think on electoral calculus, if you look at their seat prediction, it's weird because they have, I think, Labour's a 51% chance of winning the seat, even though their model has the Lib Dems getting the most votes. They did explain why, but it was maths. And I didn't really understand. Any shock results you think you'll see?
So I've got two. There's been some discussion around Angus Robertson of the SNP, leader of the SNP in Westminster, potentially losing his seat, which maybe that happens. If it does, that could very well be the sort of decapitation which puts the kibosh on SNP rhetoric about future independence referendums, which Nicola Sturgeon has already basically said they're not going to be going forward for IndyRef2 anytime soon anyway. But it certainly indicates that the SNP tide would be waning. And the other one that's been kind of discussed was Amber Rudd at various points. Again, I can't really necessarily see this, but it is one to take a look at. She is a potential future Tory leader. She is a very well-known figure. And if she were to go, that would be the more Portillo moment.
I think standing in for Theresa May in the leaders' debate as well.
Probably helped, I suppose. Her.
So, talking of Angus Robertson,
yep.
How many seats are the SNP going to lose?
So, again, as you said, I've kind of focused in on the details that I'm aware of. Maybe three losses overall. So, we've got at least one seat. Well, in effect, the SNP candidate has been barred from standing again. And they've replaced her because she was being done for fraud. Or something of the sort. I cannot remember the exact details of the case. But that, if you're having those sorts of situations, it's got to be a strong case that you lose that seat.
It's not good, really.
I've already discussed Edinburgh West for the Lib Dems. And we've already discussed Angus Robertson. So that puts it at three. And there may be one or two others. As I say, Joe Swinson making a comeback maybe puts it up to four. I can't see them losing more than six or seven.
That's interesting. I've been a bit more pessimistic. Again, that might just be out of ignorance, to be fair. And I mean, haven't seen much of the Scottish TV coverage, not living in Scotland. But I reckon they might lose about a dozen. What we'll probably see is a lot of tactical voting. I imagine that the anti-SNP vote will try and coalesce around particular parties and particular constituencies. And that's something that's quite hard to predict, I think, in a national model. And also on back of the envelope calculations, we don't know the country. But I can see them probably losing about a dozen, which would be a bit of a blow to the SNP, I think, in terms of any second referendum stuff that they're talking about. But we'll just have to see till polling day.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quickly, we can talk about the final two smaller parties.
Yep.
First of all, I think Caroline Lucas probably will remain the only Green MP. I can't see them realistically gaining anywhere. I think partly the move to two-party politics and the fact that Corbyn's a Labour leader, actually Corbyn being Labour leader probably helps. attract the Green vote to Labour.
There's one seat other than Brighton Pavilion which the Greens might be hoping to really actually pick up, which is Thangam Debonair, Labour MP for one of the Bristol constituencies.
I want to say Bristol West.
Yeah, well, I want to say Bristol West as well, which I believe is a three-way technically between Lib Dem, Labour and Green. In practice, I think that probably boils down to a two-way between Green and Labour. I can't see them being able to make that much headway there, and there's one or two of the seats they're technically targeting, but I can't see them making any real breakthroughs anywhere else. So I would say that Caroline Lucas is likely to remain the only Green MP.
It's been hard for them to make an impact on the national picture. Obviously, Lucas was at the debates, performed creditably, as you'd expect. She's quite a decent media performer, but she wasn't interviewed by Andrew Neil as part of the leadership programmes, whereas skinhead Rupert the Bear, Paul Nuttall, was. And do you think that Paul Nuttall will be UKIP leader by Christmas?
I don't think it matters. I think UKIP are a busted flush, unless something odd happens in the Brexit negotiations. They don't have a reason to exist anymore, and I don't think they've got any talented individuals who can take them back from the brink.
Those who are around, they are going to the Tories.
Yep, Stephen Wolfson, for instance.
Mm. And I think they're becoming the fringe far-right party, and from there, it's only a small step to BNP and eventually chaos and oblivion. Let's focus just quickly on Birmingham. So we've obviously you subscribe to Not Enough Champagne on iTunes, which means that you've listened to LJ and I talk about the prospects in Birmingham seats. The Tories will potentially take three seats in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll take Edgbaston, sadly. I think they'll take Northfield. And I have a horrible feeling there's been a lot of activists going in to Erdington. But I think it's going to be very, very hard for Jack Dromey to keep Erdington. So I have us probably losing three seats here.
I've got the Tories taking two in Birmingham, Northfield in Erdington. I've not put Edgbaston down because, again, potentially, given the student population that does exist in Edgbaston, maybe that's higher youth turnout works in the favour of the Labour candidate. It may not be enough.
Parochial issues aside, which Labour policy will the Conservatives steal in the next Parliament?
Now, you see, I've gone for Labour's policy on basically regionalising the national grid. It's one of those ridiculously technical policies which, if you actually get down into the details of it, isn't that weird or wonderful at all. And it's the sort of thing where, given that Theresa May has already gone for energy caps and price freezes in that kind of area, where I could see them as part of a push for devolution or a headline devolving powers over energy to mayors, for instance. Certainly the likes of Andy Street would probably push for.
A northern powerhouse in the very literal sense.
Almost part like, yeah.
See, I went for a slightly different one, but probably for a similar reason to you. I reckon there'll be something on the railways. I don't think there'll be full renationalisation, but I do think there will be some attempt to bring some railways into public ownership in some way.
Say it depends on how badly the Southern Rail situation goes.
Mm.
It would not shock me if that came under public ownership again, given that that happened with the West Coast mainline. Potentially something along those lines, but I'd say with that you'd probably be looking for something a bit more meaty than just, you know, a line being put under public ownership to make it count.
Nine predictions. I'm going to finish with a tenth, that Theresa May will be Prime Minister after the election. I don't think she'll last the full Parliament. I think that a lot of her authority has been damaged in the election campaign. I think there was a Huffington Post article which was scathing, absolutely scathing of Tory candidates, saying words that I'm not going to say on this podcast because I don't really want this bond to have an explicit rating. And I, especially with the fact that we've got rocky Brexit negotiations coming up, we've got the economy will hit a rough patch as well. I think a lot of her authority is going. I think, as Alex Massey said, we quoted this in a previous episode, I think she is the Tories' Gordon Brown. I think the Tories will be ruthless and will ditch her.
Mm-hmm. No, I can easily see something like that happening. Certainly over the Brexit negotiations, if it looks like things aren't going well, well could either mean they've given up trying to go for a hard Brexit and have instead focused on trying to buy some extra time by bringing in some kind of transitional deal, or you know, just for whatever reason, everything's just going completely tits up. I could easily see the Conservatives forcing her out. I could see the combination of that and a decline in the economy. Whether that's Brexit-related, whether that's global or whatever, I think the campaign has demonstrated that Theresa May does not have a firm control of the Tory party tiller. So I could easily see her not being Prime Minister within a couple of years' time, which means, dear listeners, in about 2 years' time, we could have another election.
Don't even joke about that kind of thing. I just don't want to go through this again. And I think if there is a Tory majority of about 40, as you think there might be, I think she'll also be the problem of crushing expectations mismanagement.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you can only get a Labour majority, a majority of 40 against a Labour opposition that was in complete chaos and below a 25-point lead, I think her days would be numbered.
Yeah, and given the way that Theresa May responds to challenges, the correct thing for her to do in that situation is bring back Michael Gove, bring back Nicky Morgan and those sorts of figures that were booted out of the cabinet. But she won't do that, in all likelihood, which therefore means they've got freedom to cause trouble in various forms, which, all in all, is just going to make her life a hell of a lot harder and will mean that, you know, almost a bit of a domino effect of disciplinary measures all end up in the Conservative Party, and she will have a split backbench.
But we'll have to talk about all of that on Saturday, and we'll work out exactly how many of these predictions were right, if any of them were right. Thank you to everyone who has rated our podcast on iTunes. We've got 2 5-star ratings, but then you knew it already. This is obviously a 5-star podcast, isn't it, listeners? If you want to add your collection to the growing band of 5-star ratings, that really would help people discover the show. Our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper, and our logo is designed by James Cram. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. I'm at Peckham Writer.
And I'm at Centre Radical.
Don't forget to vote.